Hello, everyone, and welcome to Return to Shambhala. Today is Monday, August the 15th, 2011. I have a special guest tonight whom I met through the Heart Center that I talk about a lot. His name is Boyd Batten, and we'll be discussing meditation tonight. Right, Boyd?
That's right. I'm very passionate about meditation, Vicki. And by the way, thanks for inviting me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for being on. I don't have a bio prepared for you. I was hoping that you could tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, and already you've explained that you're passionate about meditation and something
sure.
that you would like the listeners to know about you.
Yeah. Well, anybody who's listening to this show probably has something of a spiritual path themselves, and so some of this will sound kind of similar. When I was a teenager, I grew up in a very small town in Washington State, and there wasn't much of anything having to do with the New Age or anything like that. In fact, I didn't even know anything about reincarnation or anything. And then one day I picked up a book, started reading about reincarnation, and it just sort of a veil parted, you know, and I suddenly began to remember at a soul level this whole larger reality, you might say, and I began to search, and I started talking to people about it, and I couldn't find anybody who was interested in talking to me. In fact, they thought I was a nut, you know.
I'm sure
lots of people have had that experience, you know.
Yes.
And so after a while, I learned to kind of be quiet about it and be a little more careful about who I talk to about it. But anyway, I continued to search, and probably in my early 20s, I was teaching a class at the University of Washington called The Path to Your Ascension, and it was essentially explaining, you know, throughout history, the dynamics of what, in spiritual terms, you know, is called the Ascension. And I was actually praying for these people that were in my class. I wanted them to be able to gain the greatest benefit from the class. And I had this interesting experience where I was praying very passionately, and I felt this burning in my chest. And it kind of scared me at first, but I realized at that point that I was experiencing the Kundalini. And after that, I began to also realize that I had to become more disciplined about my thoughts, because the Kundalini, as many people probably understand, it magnifies everything. It's a spiritual force inside of yourself. It's a part of God, but it's a part of God that's inside of us. And if you're not careful, you can actually, if you descend into, you know, problematic thinking, it magnifies it. So I had to learn to discipline myself. Later on, I actually, when I was about 24, 25, I just made up my mind that I was going to learn to meditate, just kind of, and because I hadn't really read anything or anything like that about it. And so I didn't want to be colored by the thoughts of what writers had written about meditation. I just wanted to learn it myself, and so I just did it. And I'll tell you about that later if you want. It's kind of a larger story,
sure.
But
yeah, I'd love to hear that.
As things kind of progressed through my life, I joined a spiritual community where I helped, you know, and learned and grew for many years before I found the Heart Center. And during that time, in the intermediate time, I started a business with some friends, which became very, very successful. And I learned a lot of about business, you might say. And I was a vice president of a company that got to be fairly large. And since then, I've been, now I'm executive director at the Heart Center, learning some of my business stuff, but doing what I'm passionate about, which is to help people find the spiritual tools that they require to find happiness and health, and to find, you know, connect with their higher self. So that's a little, kind of a nutshell version.
Well, that's interesting, because I think a lot of us have gone through that phase where we can't find anybody, and then finally we hook up with a book or something that, like you said, opens the door, opens the veil to another way of perceiving life. I know I read back in the 70s Ken Kise's book, Handbook to Higher Consciousness, and that was meditation in action, where anytime you felt off center or aggravated or any kind of emotional, negative emotion, you did a meditation to work on that right then and there, which is tricky. It's very tricky. And I think that's a smart thing to do.
I believe that. I love that idea. Just based on my own experience, empirically speaking, I've learned that that's great. That's good advice. if you can actually find the time and space to do it in the moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's many different types of meditation. Where would you like to take us on this topic, Boyd?
Well, here's how I'd like to frame this, Vicki, is that, you know, I'm 51 years old. I've been watching life and enjoying it and experiencing and watching other people in their path, along with, you know, and learning from all of life. And one thing that I notice when I examine the people around me is there's a lot of people in the world, in the Western Hemisphere here especially, who, you know, they can be very, very successful in business or successful in finding, you might say, a kind of a surface type of happiness. Yet I have this feeling when I look upon many people that there's sort of a painful side to life for them. And, you know, I would say that a lot of the world is, I'd say, kind of in pain or unbalanced right now. And one of my observations about that is look at how many people are trying to anesthetize themselves through alcohol and drugs or to distract themselves by constant entertainment. They're plugged into their iPods just listening to music, which plays upon their emotions and just sort of keeps them in an artificial emotional happiness state, or watching movies, or, you know, playing games, sexual games, and things like that. And, you know, if you've meditated or walked on a spiritual path for any, you know, great length of time, and you gaze upon these things, it becomes evident that what these people are doing there is that they're trying to kind of avoid a pain, I think. That's how I would typify it. There's a pain of separation and unbalance. It's a kind of a fundamental imbalance whereby that soul is experiencing life on a very surface level, on a very physical level. They might be very successful at creating things, expressing themselves in an outer way. And yet, if you study the inner arts, you'll see that there is a yin and a yang to things, okay? And I would say that those outer expressive modes that we are in the Western Hemisphere are kind of like a yang, or sort of a masculine, expressive, emanating kind of mode. And that a lot of people are unfortunately not taught, and they don't have a way to find the balance of the yin side of that, which I would typify as kind of like the feminine, intuitive, impressionistic, more inner, you might say, intuitive. It's knowing things in an omniscient way versus just out there creating things, okay? So, and I've noticed that the most effective people that I've ever met have a greater balance between this yin and this yang. And I don't know if they all meditate, but I've experienced the fact that if you go out there and work hard and express yourself and follow your goals and do things, but then you have a portion of your life where you sit down and you have quiet and you do it every day, and you meditate in whatever way you choose, I think that you find balance in a way that will be missing in those who don't have a practice like that. And so that's kind of my pitch for why I think some kind of meditation is good for almost everybody. I think that there's some people who've meditated a lot in previous lives, and there's actually some people are too introspective, and they actually need to get out there and make some waves. So it doesn't go all one way by any means. It's really about balance. So like the Buddha said, you know?
I think that's well said. I just think you summed that up in a nutshell. I call, when you started out, I call that consciousness the eat, drink, and be merry consciousness. Oh, let's just live it up. One life to live and, you know, live it to the fullest. But that's not what it's about, totally. It's fun. It's nice to have fun and go out and play golf and go out and eat and do these things, but that's not the ultimate goal for me.
That's
is
true.
To eat, drink,
and
be merry.
And I don't really think of it. Yeah, and I don't really think of it as good or bad. I'm sorry I cut you off, Vicki, but
no, you know,
I come to the point where I don't think of it as good or bad. It's really a soul's choice in expressing themselves and experiencing life. And, you know, there's actually quite a few people out, I think, as I, you know, go through life and meet people who are really good people. And, you know, they're out there doing their best to raise their kids, and they're doing their best to, you know, be nice to people around them and be good citizens, and they're volunteering and they're doing all kinds of things. And unfortunately, there are aspects of our, like I said, our Western society, which if you follow the lead of many other people, you'll find yourself in this unbalanced state, I guess. And
well,
there are
that's
really
true.
Good people who are in pain because of that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I was looking at the Mayo Clinic website, and they have meditation there for their people, but they've got the people when they're already sick and failing, so that it took that to get them to the point where they're going to try some things now to get back in balance through meditation. Yeah. So that was good to see the Mayo Clinic is promoting meditation.
I think that's awesome. It's it's interesting. Nature shows you the way one way or another, doesn't she?
Does, definitely.
Yeah. So have you ever meditated? Do you meditate, Vicki?
Well, you know, I started off with TM, Transcendental Meditation, back in the 70s.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And then I became a Flower of Life facilitator, so I taught the Merkaba meditation, and then Drumvalo, who came up with the meditation, also taught us to teach the Earth-Sky meditation, where we feel totally connected to all that is, and and the Merkaba meditation, you have to understand the chakra system. You have to understand the four lower bodies and the how they work together. And then, of course, the Ken Kise's approach to Handbook to Higher Consciousness, where you meditate in the moment when you aren't in balance, when you're out of harmony. And you have mantras that you say that help you to become centered. Like if I'm way off, I have a mantra that says, I have everything I need to enjoy my here and now, unless I get caught up in, you know, this, that, and the other. So I have. But I'm interested to know what kind of meditation you are about and what you promote.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, that's one of the main things I'd like to convey is you know, I had this idea at the point when I just decided, kind of out of the blue, I'm going to learn to meditate. And I already was engaged in using mantras, affirmations, and prayer, and singing, and a number of very outward, kind of outer expressive types of co-creating with energy, you might say. Some people might call it white magic or what have you. It's basically creating reality. And once again, though that's more of an, I'd say an outer, well, it's an expressive activity, whereas I instinctively found that I needed the other side, the intuitive side, and so I decided I was going to meditate, and for some reason I just decided, I was a young man, I was just still in college, and I said, I'm not going to read any books, and I didn't have any person to tell me what to do either, so I said, I'm just going to discover this empirically. And so I just decided I'm going to have a place every day. I'm going to go there for about a half hour, which eventually pretty rapidly turned into an hour, so 30 to 60 minutes. And I would sit down, and it occurred to me to just say a little prayer, just to get a little bit of help. So I didn't really have an especially strong relationship with Jesus, but I grew up as a Christian, and so I knew that as knowing that Jesus was a master who I could actually trust, I asked Jesus to come and be with me and to protect me from any influences that would be detrimental to the process, and to kind of place him, his being, his light body over mine, and to help me learn this, to this meditation. And once again, it was kind of a spontaneous thing. I didn't read that. Nobody told me to do this prayer to Jesus. I just kind of did it. And then I did it every time for years, I would say, this little prayer. And what happened was, at first, I would just concentrate on the light body of Jesus, this bright light, and accept that Jesus was going to help me. And that in itself was an exercise in concentration, concentration is very important to meditation. It's like the precursor. If you can't concentrate for a long period of time, then I don't think you're not really meditating either. that's kind of a harsh view of it, but I believe that that's kind of so. So anybody who is determined to meditate, I think in the early stages, needs to discipline their mind and body so that they can hold their body very still, but in a relaxed way, and then identify their feelings and to be able to still those emotions and desires and feelings so that that kind of emotional body is very quiescent. And then to begin to examine the thoughts, the mental part of yourself, and to be able to observe it without getting caught up in it. Because a lot of us, especially in the West, we think of ourselves as being one with our thoughts, and we actually let the mental part of ourselves kind of run things, unfortunately. And there are problems with that. And actually, initially, you can find yourself trying to concentrate and meditate and be thinking about something but not even being aware of it, which is kind of a trap. And you're embarrassed when you realize 10 minutes later, I've been having this, you know, this other thought, and I was kind of tricked. And so you bring yourself back, and it's a matter of bringing yourself back to the thing that you're concentrating on, which I think ideally for people, you know, in our Western society, it's better to meditate upon something generally at mm-hmm. first, at least to get yourself going. Meditating upon the void, I understand that, you know, in some Buddhist practices, they meditate on the void, and I'm not sure that's the best thing for a lot of people here in the U.S. and around in this side of the country, because we have such busy lives, and we have such a disadvantage in learning to concentrate, because there's so many things to put our attention on. It's best to just pick one, and it's probably better to put it your attention on something that's a very high focus and frequency. And in this case, I placed my attention on Jesus. And if I found myself thinking about something instead of Jesus and his light body and see his heart just burning and shining, then I would notice, and I would bring it back. And I notice after about maybe 10 or 15 minutes, the part of me that would become distracted started to kind of settle down. And even at that, sometimes memories would start to flow by me. And memories are associated with what I would call the etheric body of ourselves. And we do sometimes just find ourselves falling into reverie, remembering things. And once again, that is actually not what you want to be doing when you're meditating, because you're actually trying to punch up through a layer of consciousness which is higher than all of this. The physical body, the emotional body, the mental body of man, and then the memory body are all things that we use consciously, at least portions of it day to day. And I would say a really good goal for most people in order to gain integration, is to integrate with the higher bodies, the bodies higher than that, which they have various different names, but one name for the next higher body above that, which is the Christ body or the Buddhic body, and then the next higher octave or body above that is the causal body, and then the next one above that is the divine monad, or the I am presence. Those are names that a lot of people understand. And these three frequencies above that are formless, and they're a state of perfection. They're in a place where there's such intense vibrations of light and perfection and love and all the good qualities that they are something that's distinct and apart from this lower experience that we have. And so I would say, you know, one very good goal of meditation is to be able to rise and transcend above those four lower bodies, the consciousness of them in your soul, and to experience the consciousness of those higher bodies, which are, once again, you still. They're you, but they're a part of you and all of us, which most people don't find a way to interface with. That's the thing. And so I was learning to move up through those layers, and it usually, early on, it would take me anywhere from 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, depending on, I don't know, the circumstances. And then I would find everything would calm down, and I found that Jesus or sometimes other masters would come or angels would come who evidently took an interest in helping me, and they would suggest something to me. I think Jesus himself suggested everything, many, many things that I was to practice and learn, and because I was learning everything empirically, I guess I was depending on those guys, you know, to show me what the best path of meditation was for me. So after about 10 or 20 minutes, I would find myself in this state where I was very still, in a state where I was just doing almost nothing but just quietly observing. And then sometimes the master would suggest something like, place your attention on your own heart chakra. And I would do that. Initially, that was something that they had me work on a lot, was if you study esoteric science and study the chakras, inside the heart chakra, which is a very special, very central chakra for all of us, there is a little tiny, intensely burning point. And everybody's heard of the mantra called Om Mani Padme Hum, and I believe it translates to Hail to the Jewel and the Lotus. And, you know, I've never actually confirmed this with any authorities, but I think that that's what that's talking about, is it's that jewel, that intense light inside in the very center of the heart chakra, which is a piece of God, a piece of the God of us, you might say, our own I Am presence that's there to help us become all that we can be. And does this make sense?
Oh, it does.
Nomenclature, everything? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so that was something that they had me work on a lot at first. And what I found, Vicki, is that if you put your attention on that bright light inside the center of your chest, what happens is that it grows brighter. And you may not be able to see it clairvoyantly at first, but if you just intellectually first understand that it's there and hold the framework and belief that it's there and just keep your attention there and believe that there is a piece of God inside of you right there, then what happens is what you put your attention on grows, you might say. And God, within yourself, once acknowledged, comes to the fore, you might say. And then what I've experienced is that a whole host of very, I would say, visceral feelings, because when that light starts to grow inside of your chest, it really changes things. It starts to really elevate your consciousness, and you start to experience things through the eyes of these higher bodies, you might say. And the raw radiation of the expanded light starts to affect your soul, the cells of your body and your nervous system and all parts of yourself. And what I found was that was one of the most important things that I discovered, was this biofeedback of that feeling I had when I was centered and that flame in my heart was expanded. And when it was burning, I found that was a really good goal to have, you might say, all through the day. And at first it was just during the meditation, but then it became evident that that was really one of the goals of one who wanted to become an adept, was to learn to hold that feeling, hold that expanded light inside of oneself all through the day.
Right.
So that's you know, that I'll stop. I think I've been talking for a long time here, but that was one of the key things that I would love to convey to people who really, really want to ascend to their adept self in this lifetime, is to learn to find that, get that burning sensation in the heart after gazing at that jewel, that bright light inside your heart, to the point where you can feel it, because then you know if you're centered, if you're in presence. A lot of people have read Eckhart Tolle's books and understand his approach, and I would say that I've found empirically myself a great deal of what he's found also. So I read his stuff now, and I find that I don't get a lot new out of it, because I've kind of, you know, found out a lot of that stuff by myself, although I really appreciate what he's doing for the earth and for people. But when he talks about being in presence, that's what I'm talking about. He doesn't really talk, at least as far as I've found, he doesn't talk a lot about this burning sensation in the heart, but I think it's the same thing. So, you know, if you want to have one thing to just have as a goal, shoot for that, and feeling that burning in the heart, and experience the transcendent consciousness that comes with that, and a whole host of health benefits come to your being, your ability to concentrate, to your ability to understand and love other people, your ability to understand where pain comes from within yourself. I think that once you get into that space, anyone is able much more to be able to identify those, where the pain is coming from. Pain from patterns inside of themselves, from past actions. Either somebody's done something bad to you, or you've done something bad to somebody else, and it ends up being kind of congealed inside of you as a pattern that is a pain pattern. And Eckhart Tolle calls that, like in aggregate, the pain body. And I think that once you're in that presence, you are much more able to understand where it's coming from, to forgive, to love, and to find resolution with those things, instead of just masking it through drinking and revelry and distracting yourself, so to speak. So,
well, I know in the Merkaba meditation that Drumbolo Melchizedek taught me to teach others, that's the very first thing of that meditation, is come into your heart, feel your heart, and feel feelings of gratitude and appreciation. And then we would give examples, maybe how much you appreciate the beautiful earth, things, places on the earth, and get into those kinds of gratitude and appreciation type feelings. And then it would move on from there, but always starting in the heart, coming into the heart first. But I never thought about the flame, to focus on the flame, which is an actual physical flame, right, Boyd? It's an actual flame.
Well, I wouldn't
flame
call it physical so much. It's actually something
an energetic
that you can experience.
Flame.
Yeah, it's pure energy, but it's energy from the very highest part of yourself. If you look at what I mentioned earlier on, there's these three higher spiritual bodies. The flame is a direct emanation from the very highest, which is the monadic body. Mm-hmm. And it's just a special kind of gift from God, that when we as souls come down here into the earth, and we're going to go through trials, we're going to learn the hard way a lot of things, yet it's like this little secret piece of God that's inside of there and experiencing it with you. And not only that, there's an interesting thing. It's not your soul. It's like it's an unblemished part of God, you might say, that's descended. I think that the soul itself is also a part of that, but it's a part which has been specifically prepared of God, that is impressed down into these lower layers of vibration, And then the soul kind of gathers memories and gathers experiences, and it's a little different than this flame, this jewel flame in the heart. It's a little different, and not only that, but I believe that a part of us is also, you might say, still in God, which is also a great benefit to the meditation, you might say. So, yeah, some people call that, in some of the metaphysical movements, they call it the threefold flame, and it's because if it's standing still, it looks like three little flames, and each one of them is a little bit different color. There's one that's kind of bluish, there's one that's kind of gold colored, there's one that's kind of pink, and those are representative of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. There's many triad manifestations, meanings within that. If you study all the numerology and psychology and the astrology, the higher, you know, spiritual astrology. But what I've noticed is when I place my attention on those, there, that little three-plumed flame, it actually starts to spin. It kind of spins so that they all kind of blend into a little pillar of light, and they look, and it gets brighter and brighter, and it gets bigger and bigger. That's the cool thing, is the more you put your attention and your adoration on that little flame in there, it can get like to a foot high, or so it just fills your whole chest cavity, or you can actually get it to be so it's bigger than your whole body. I've experienced that many times, or even larger than that. And not only that, well, once you're inside that consciousness, you can actually project your consciousness and see anywhere in time and space you'd like. And so you mentioned the Merkaba, and I, for many, many years, I had no idea what that was. And I was experiencing these things, you know, empirically, and just learning it by doing it and experiencing it, because I didn't want to be sullied by other ideas. But later on, it wasn't that long ago, I finally made the connection. Oh, they're talking about the Merkaba. I think it's the expanded threefold flame of God, which becomes like a lattice of very energetic light around us. And it, once you are in that vehicle, time and space mean something very different. They, you know, being everywhere at once is not unusual.
Right.
Believe it or not, you know? Yeah.
Some people that I know up in Washington State, they see a lot of what we're calling Merkaba ships, vehicles of light, and when they focus on the ones that are flying over the ranch there, they ask them to brighten their light. They call it power up, and I really do believe that it's coming from their hearts, that that's a ball of light moving across the sky, and then we project our thoughts, power up, we get all excited, and just boom, this big light, and we've got it on video. It's just amazing, mm-hmm. But I believe it's coming straight from the heart of that, yeah. That light ship. We call it light ships, or light, I'm not political correct, but I've seen it. I've experienced it in, yeah, Mongolia, in the Gobi, uh-huh, Desert. These bright balls of light that just, they just beautiful. So, and like you said, I believe it's coming straight from the heart.
Yeah, I think that is the nature of adeptship, and I'm not here to try to proclaim myself as what I would call an adept. I think I have a way to go for sure, but I am very serious about pursuing it. And I've become very clear that the key to adeptship is the control of the faculty of the attention and the expansion of the flame in the heart to the point where you just become all of the God presence of yourself. You transcend the kind of smaller human concepts and limitations and approaches, the selfishness and all that stuff, not magically. I think it happens a day at a time. We have to sort of, surrender those things, you know what I mean? But each time you surrender one of the petty, mundane parts of yourself consciously, the light gets brighter. the light gets brighter. And, you know, I do experience other light beings. I never really thought to think of it as being like ships or anything like that. It just seems like it's their light body. That's kind of my own perception of it. It's a body that we are all created with. That's kind of how I think of it anyway. That's my
own, that's a better word, light body. Exactly.
Yeah. So there's I would say there's lots of benefits. I mean, going back to there's a couple different ways to look at this. A lot of people would benefit from health-wise and from the point of view of I would say helping themselves psychologically, just be more happy with, and they don't have to feel like they're getting into this kind of bigger deal, kind of like what we were just talking about, the Merkaba and, you know, becoming an adept or something like that. There's probably a lot of really good people that would not choose to do that, yet I believe that many people in the West who, if they could be convinced to commit themselves a portion of their day. Usually it's best early in the morning, the very first thing when you wake up, as soon as you're actually awake to do it. If they could actually commit themselves to like 20 minutes or something like that each day and just pursue at some portion of this goal, I feel that a lot of people who did that, most people, everybody, would find some of those benefits I was talking about, which is they would find a way out of, like, the moodiness and the need to be propped up and kind of like, there's all these things that people are trying to be cured of by psychotherapists and psychologists and hypnotherapists and stuff. I mean, and look at all the drugs that people take for depression. Uh-huh. For heaven's sake, okay, just look at that. Everybody knows there's people popping billions of antidepressants and drugs of all kinds that are trying to help people not be depressed. Well, okay, wait. there's some benefit that could come from that. And what it is it's not masking the symptoms either. When you find through meditation a way to find the root cause of why you're feeling this depression, and you can learn to, through affirmations or, like you said, mantras, to love yourself and love that person who maybe caused you to feel that way, there is real healing that happens. There's real, honest-to-goodness, core healing that is not the same as masking symptoms, which I believe that a lot of pharmaceuticals do, and that's, they actually are honest about it. That's what they say they do. You know, so there's one whole layer of, you know, I think of our whole society would benefit from this. And then there's this other whole layer where if you really want to go be all you can be, you might say, spiritually speaking, and I believe that there's more and more people in our generation, in this time and day and age, who are ready for that and who are excited about being very, very spiritual beings, maybe not necessarily religious. A lot of people say, I'm not very religious, but I'm very spiritual. Isn't that interesting?
Uh-huh. It is. Well, with all the stresses and strains from what's going on the planet right now with the weather, the economy, wars, famine, health issues, all of this, meditation can definitely help. And I know for me, sometimes I say, oh, I don't want to, I don't have the time. But once I get there, then I don't want to leave. I have to, you know, it's kind of like, oh, I don't want to go to church. And then you go to church and you're so glad you went, because it just, the benefits just pour through, and it's worth every minute of it.
Yep. It's a kind of a test. You're right. It's, you know, they say in esoteric terms, you know, we're all kind of walking a path. And even people who don't really think of themselves as spiritual beings really are. They're spiritual beings having a temporary physical experience, and that we all walk a path that's a graduated path of initiation. And, you know, choosing to methodically move forward in that path is, it's not easy, is it?
No.
It seems like there's portions of us inside of us that sort of oppose that. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. It's but you know, it's doable, you know. Once you begin to experience some of these benefits, it's really good to methodically and purposely remember them and review them. I actually journaled for a number of years on this, and it wasn't to share with anybody or anything like that, but it helped me remind me of the beautiful things that I experienced along the way that are not so easy to remember. But they buoy you up when, you know, it's like early in the morning and you didn't sleep very well last night and you're thinking, oh, I just want to sleep instead of meditate this morning or do my affirmations or whatever. But if you actually can journal or have some way of remembering the beautiful reason why you're doing that, I would recommend it. I learned that only slowly. Once again, I didn't read books about this, and so I just wanted to find out, you know, and it probably took me longer, but for me it was all more authentic, I guess, to get there if everything was sort of Gnostic or first person or empirical. So that's another little tidbit of information that I pass on that's important. Any other questions you have or ideas that people might be interested in hearing about? I could actually just talk, but I'd like you to kind of guide this if you'd like to anyway.
Well, I'm interested in what you have to say, Boyd, and what you've experienced. Really, I'm open to this. I have my own ways of meditation. I love guided meditations. Like you said, focus, have something to focus on. I like global meditations where we have something in mind. We have something that we are working to achieve together with our synchronized times. And I love things like that, those kinds of meditations, group meditations.
Mm-hmm.
Things that we do with the Heart Center.
Yeah, I have a close tie to Kuan Yin. And I think that I've had some past lives in which I was a monk, a Buddhist monk, probably dedicated to Kuan Yin, and I probably made some good progress. And this is just a guess. I don't have any proof of that. And so I have a great affinity towards Kuan Yin as mercy and forgiveness, and which is closely tied to the violet flame, which is something that a number of people in the New Age movement understand. And I thought I'd share one thing that I discovered, which I think is very beautiful and very, very valuable, and that is during a period of time I was meditating and very interested always in doing what you were just describing, which is group healing of the planet, you might say, you know, meditating mm-hmm. upon a whole cross-section of society, like children, you know, maybe especially children who are orphans in the street or something like that. And from that heightened sense that you gain when you're inside that presence, you can see a lot. You might say almost see portions of the whole world all at once, and you can actually feel yourself as being one with those people that you place your attention on, which takes some practice. But the fact is, if you are focused on and you are basically merged into that flame that's in your heart, you are in a state of non-duality, what they call non-duality in Buddhism, unity, okay? Mm-hmm. And when you're inside of that, you are experiencing being one with all life simultaneously, and coincidentally, your sense of time and space gets pretty goofed up, and it's kind of kind of interesting at first. It takes some experience and repetitions to kind of get used to it. It feels like you're a fish out of water because, frankly, we're all used to being in these little bodies that are 5 or 6 feet high, and we think of ourselves in terms of walking around in this two-dimensional space, just walking on the surface of the earth, okay, and we take that for granted. But as soon as you are inside this flame, and I'm saying this all from first-person experience, all of that goes out the window, and you find that you can be anywhere you want, and you can be everywhere. You can be in the heart, you might say, because that flame that you are one with is one with God and all of life, and it's one with that flame that is in other people. You can actually experience life as that person, or I don't actually do too much of that kind of stuff, but what I do instead is identify a group of people that I would love to, and God through me to bless, okay? And you basically set the intent that oneness, that your heart is going to be one with all those people, and you are then in a network with those people, and you can feel the pain and feel the stress of those people, and you can see, in a sense, the patterns of thought that are kind of causing them to keep doing things that cause them pain and so forth. And what you can do then at that point is something that is called Ho'oponopono. Have you ever heard of that?
Uh-huh.
You've heard of that. Have you talked about that on this show? Should I
no,
not warn people?
No, we haven't.
That
please
okay?
do.
Okay. Let's so Ho'oponopono is a very interesting thing. It's something that comes from Hawaii, and it's the spiritual people, you know, like the medicine man, you might say, version in Hawaii. They discovered this, and that is that you can heal anything by healing that thing within yourself. And it's a conundrum if you're not in this in that flame of unity. It's something that I don't think our intellectual being can actually understand. You can explain. I could explain to you. Look, you can heal, you know, the problem of hunger worldwide, Vicky, by, you know, curing, forgiving, and helping. You might say curing that, healing it within yourself. And the intellectual lower self, you might say, the mental self, it can't understand that yet. When you're in that space, when you're in meditation, it makes perfect sense. And so what you can do is, because you are one with that, you can actually take it all upon yourself and transmute it. And I think it's good to have help with something like that. Like I work a lot with Kuan Yin, and she is far, far, far more effective. She's this magnificent, powerful Buddhic being who knows everything relative to us, and she helps me see and feel the frequencies of the pink, violet, purple flames that are just perfect for forgiving all of that stuff. But it is very key, I think, to first merge yourself with that and say, "This, I'm going to claim this. I'm going to claim this as my own, this pain," and because it is a part of me. It really is. It isn't just those people out there that created this problem. I am one with it, and you can take it to yourself. And what I'm explaining here is a way to use the violet flame, which I think is kind of an enhanced version of it. A lot of people have heard of saying mantras to the violet flame and visualizing violet flame over people, over countries, over organs and bodies that need to be healed, all kinds of things. And what I'm explaining is kind of another way of doing it, which I did the previous version for many years. I've been decreeing to the violet flame and invoking the violet flame for over 30 years, and I do understand that. It's a really good blessing. If you're interested in working on much larger outcomes, I think this Ho'oponopono is very powerful. And I'd urge everybody who's listening to this to Google it and read about it and maybe just think about it a little bit. It's kind of an odd spelling. I don't know that I could even spell it. It's Ho'oponopono. I know how to say it. That's all. So it's Ho'oponopono.
Yeah.
Anyway, read about it and think about it. There's a fellow who did a bunch of experiments with this, I hope I say this right, but there's this fellow who he worked in a prison where there was a lot of really low vibration. I mean, it's where all these murderers and rapists and people who were experiencing enormous pain were. Okay. And he wanted to try this out. And so I forget what his job was even there. I don't even know what it was. But what he did day after day as part of his job there was he'd sit in a chair and he had a book which had like the case history of all the different inmates there. And he wouldn't focus on the bad. Instead, he would just claim all of that pain for himself and say, "I'm sorry, I love you. Wow. I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you." That's the basic mantra for Ho'oponopono is, "I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you." And when you say that and when you feel it, you are both the person who is perhaps being blessed, and you are the blessing, as well as the agency of the blessing. And I can just tell you, I'm very excited to share that with people, and everybody needs to sort of find it and make that kind of a thing themselves, their own, through practice and so forth. But it's another level of the violet flame, which I think is very useful in this time, because there is so much pain in the world, and everybody can make a difference.
Well, I was just talking with a group of people that do Ho'oponopono, and they're working with starving people. And what they do is they focus on those that are starving, and every time they take a bite of food, they offer that food to that person. And there's been some evidence to show that when you eat for someone else, that takes away their hunger.
That's
their,
cool.
I think that's a good solid example of unity, of oneness, and how, yes, I am that starving person, but I can eat for you until you can make it to the refugee camp, or, you know, to when you can find something to eat. I can hold you over till then.
Yeah, that's very cool. Thanks for sharing that. You know, I realized I didn't finish that story. I kind of forgot the punchline was that over time, this prison became transformed, and it became very, very calm, and there wasn't all this fighting and killing and so forth, and the inmates started studying and getting, you know, degrees, and it basically helped them. I mean, this man, this humble man, worked on himself as a proxy for these people, you might say, and it worked, and that is another example of it, and your example of focusing on these people who are without food. I love that. That's beautiful.
Well, we're almost out of time. I think we have about 2 minutes, Boyd. I wanted to mention something about our gathering at Mount Shasta. I can't make it. I'm back to work as of today with the school system. And but if you can go to Mount Shasta this weekend for that, can you talk about that? I'm sorry, because I'm going to do it online.
Fine.
I'm going to do it online, and if people want to do it online, they can do it if they can't make arrangements to get there.
I'd be happy to. We have in the Heart Center live conferences, quite a number each year, and out on location where like-minded people get together, and we do this kind of spiritual work together, and it's very beautiful. And we also hear messages from the masters through an amanuensis named David Lewis, and I believe he's been on this show. And there's one happening this August 19th to the 21st in the small town of Mount Shasta. It's near Redding in Northern California. And if anybody'd like to attend, either through the Internet, through audio, all the information to do that is online on our website called heartscenter.org, and I would urge anybody to investigate. We have quite a lot of things to offer, I think, on our website. I started out in the Heart Center as kind of one of the tech guys that really started the website and started up, and I'm very proud of what it offers, and it's the way that cements our community together, because I think we do have a beautiful community in the Heart Center. It's not a church. It's not really even an organization that you can, you know, like pay to belong to. It's a movement, and you either come and benefit from it, or I choose not to, and I love that idea. And I think we have many, many things here on our site, which is kind of our meeting ground, you might say, for our community, and I'd urge everyone to examine it. Look it up and just see what we have to offer.
It's a great website. Always something going on every day. The Ruby
yep.
Ray is going on right now, so I'll catch it for the last half hour. There's just always something that that you can participate in. And I notice with the classes, the Meru University, the online conferences, if you can't make it there, everything goes smooth. You put in the code and everything 99.9% of the time works out. It's amazing how we can gather together like that over the
yep.
internet.
Mm-hmm. Yep, technology is a beautiful thing. If you go out on a limb and learn a little bit about how to use these higher level features of the internet, our audio broadcasts and video broadcasts you mentioned, but also our Meru University courses use an online teaching system, which allows everyone to contribute and everyone to participate. You get to see the slides, you get to see the speakers, video and audio, and you get to participate through texting as well as if you choose to speak also. And they're very beautiful. We've had almost 40 of those Meru University courses, anywhere from 6 to 10 weeks long, each of them. I think there's been over 24 different teachers and many, many different deep esoteric spiritual topics that are helpful on the path back home to God.
Yes, it's a wonderful movement. I'm happy to be a part of it. Well, Boyd, anything else? I believe we've run out of time. Any last minute things? I want to thank you so much for coming on and sharing your thoughts and experiences. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, I'll say one last thing, and that is, you know, everybody's heard of this 2012 thing, and there's a lot of fear out in the world, and I'm not fearful at all, and I'd urge everyone not to feel fearful, because what you put your attention on, you create, and who wants to expand and enhance and amplify fear? So
right.
I think that the world is actually on the cusp of a beautiful future. And that it's sometimes painful letting go of old patterns and paradigms and things, and that's what we're going through right now, and it's very scary for a lot of people. And, you know, there's going to be, some challenges for all of us, but I'd like to urge everyone to be hopeful for the future, to feel hopeful for the year 2012 and beyond, and to see that we're creating a new future that I think is going to be wonderful. It's going to far surpass what I saw in my earlier, you know, years, I think. You know, I was born in 1960 and we've been through a lot, Vicki, haven't we? And I think the best is yet to come.
I think the best
is yet to come.
Thank you so much for those words.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're out of here. See you in 2 weeks, everybody. Much love to you, and have a wonderful evening, what's left of it. Bye, Boyd. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks again, Vicki, for having me on here. It was wonderful to talk about these things. It's good for me.
Great. I'm glad.
Very edifying. And God bless everyone out there.